Welcome back to Pop Culture Podcast. My name is Spencer, and for those of you who are new or just don't know, this podcast is basically just an audio version of my videos over on YouTube, which you can find if you go over to YouTube, type in the search bar at The Film Punch. Should find my channel from there, but in case you don't, you can also head over to my Instagram, also at The Film Punch. The link in the bio should take you where you need to go. But yeah, not only can you find the video version of what I do over here, but you can also get the content earlier over there, so highly suggest going over there for all of that and subscribing if you don't mind. I would very much appreciate it. In this episode, I will be reviewing two movies. First, I will be reviewing 2013's Man of Steel in honor of Henry Cavill not playing Superman anymore. My bad there. And after that, I will be reviewing 2022's Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is actually a movie I reviewed earlier on in the year on the podcast. I just haven't reviewed it for the YouTube channel yet, so I wanted to review it for the channel, hence why it is on here. But that's all I have to review for today. Let's not waste any time. Let's thank the sponsors and get into the reviews. This episode is sponsored by Audible, which, if you don't know, has a great selection of audiobooks, originals, and podcasts. And right now, if you go to www.audibletrial.com/popculturepodcast, you can get a free 30-day trial of Audible Plus, which lets you listen to a selection of audiobooks, originals, sleep tracks, meditation programs, and podcasts. Or you can get a free 30-day trial of Audible Premium Plus, which gives you all of that from Audible Plus, as well as one free title per month from an extended selection of bestsellers and new releases. And you own those, so that's awesome. So yeah, if you want to go get that 30-day free trial of Audible, that website is www.audibletrial.com/popculturepodcast. Now on with the show.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Alright, so it's official, Henry Cavill will not be returning as Superman, which for me and a lot of other people is very disappointing news. So with that news, I decided to review 2013's Man of Steel, and this film was directed by Zack Snyder. I'm thinking I might actually end up reviewing the Snyder Cut of the Justice League. I think I might watch pretty much all the films that Henry Cavill is in leading up to that, and those films would be this film here, Batman v Superman, Justice League 2017, and then the Zack Snyder's Justice League from last year. So I might review all of those. I know Superman technically showed up in Shazam, but it wasn't Henry Cavill, and he also showed up in Black Adam, but I already reviewed that movie, and honestly don't really want to give it more of my money in the theater. But yeah, 2013's Man of Steel, like I said before, directed by Zack Snyder, and the screenplay is by David S. Goyer, story by David S. Goyer and Christopher Nolan, and based on the character Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. The cast here, we have Henry Cavill, of course, as Clark Kent slash Kal-El, which is his Kryptonian name. We have Amy Adams as Lois Lane. We have Michael Shannon as the villain, General Zod. We have Diane Lane as Martha Kent, Clark's human mother. We have Russell Crowe as Jor-El, Clark's Kryptonian father. We have Kevin Costner as Jonathan Kent, Clark's human father, and then Ailet Zurer, hopefully I'm saying that right, as Laura Lorvan, which is Clark's Kryptonian mother. Also in the cast, we have Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White, which is kind of like the boss around the Daily Planet. Kind of a side character, but I do think he has a few very impactful scenes, one in particular towards the end in a particular destruction scene with along with Michael Kelly's character, Steve Lombard, and Rebecca Buller's character, Jenny. If you have watched the movie, you know what scene I'm talking about, but that scene had me in tears. So yeah, for a small character, he has a few very impactful moments. We have Christopher Maloney as Colonel Nathan Hardy, which is one of the military men in this movie. Harry Lennix as General Swanwick, again, one of the military people. We have Richard Schiff, hopefully I'm saying that right, as Dr. Emil Hamilton, which is kind of like the doctor, the scientist that they keep around the base and whatnot, I guess, to like study the aliens. Not a very huge character. Andrzej Tro, hopefully I'm saying that right, as Fuara Ol, which is one of General Zod's minions, I guess you could say. I think she's the only one here that I actually have credited. That's pretty much the main cast for you. But yeah, in this movie, you do get the origin of Superman. You get to see Krypton be destroyed. And I like that kind of stuff because, with the character of Superman, we haven't seen his origin as many times in live action as we have with somebody like Batman. And in here, I think they have a really good setup for his origin, and I like the way that they do it. For the most part, I would say that I think the Krypton stuff goes on a little bit too long, but I do like being immersed in that world right up until it's destroyed. Spoiler alert, but everybody knows that origin by this point. And again, everybody knows the origin, but they want to show it while not doing too much of it. And they don't show you like immediately leaving Krypton, crashing on Earth, being raised by his parents. They show a lot of that in flashbacks, which I don't necessarily mind. I'm sure the movie would have been a lot longer if they kind of filmed it in a linear path where you have him leaving Krypton, crash on Earth, being raised, and seeing him kind of become an adult. That would make it a lot longer of a movie than it is. Not completely sure what the runtime is on this film, to be completely honest. It's a lengthy film for sure. I think it's maybe close to 3 hours. Is it over 2 hours? I'm not. It has to be over 2 hours. I'm pretty sure it is. But yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily feel that runtime if that is, what the runtime is, 2.5 hours ish, maybe. Because the entire time, for the most part, I really am enjoying it. It does slow down a little bit in parts, especially in those flashback parts. And especially when you start to get those flashbacks closer to the climax of the film, where you're just like, all right, I want to stop seeing the flashbacks and just kind of see the action right in front of me. But for the most part, I really do enjoy those flashbacks. And one in particular really gives me like with the way, because up until a certain point, they show like different actors for like kid and teenage Clark Kent up until a certain point, and then they show Clark Kent kind of like maybe in his like early 20s-ish, maybe. It doesn't look weird or anything like that. I think he's like maybe in at this time, maybe like also late 20s, early 30s, possibly. So it doesn't look too weird, but the way his hair was really reminded me of, and forgive me, I don't remember the actor's name, but the one from Smallville. So yeah, just those moments I like to see for sure. I like the little Smallville kind of like glances that we see of the town, and just kind of seeing a little bit of him growing up there. I wish we would have gotten a little bit more. But yeah, there are a couple actors here credited. One in particular that I want to mention, Jaden Gold, who plays Lana Lang, which is a very, very popular character in the Superman mythos, I guess. She's somebody that Clark grew up with in Smallville when he was a kid, and also was a love interest, I believe. So she shows up in the, well, not this actress, but the character shows up in Superman and Lois, which, by the way, I haven't even mentioned yet. If you haven't watched Superman and Lois on the CW, I highly recommend checking it out. It's also on HBO Max along with Man of Steel. So if you have a subscription for that, you can go ahead and watch the first season, at least, is the one that I watched. I think the second season is done now, pretty sure. But the first season, at least, from what I saw, was really good. And I very much enjoyed it. Tyler Hoechlin, I think, is a very good runner-up for Superman, right next to Henry Cavill, honestly. I think he embodies that character very well. But yeah, I don't think he'll be coming into the movie realm or anything like that, but I think that would be really cool if he got to play the character in live action for a movie, because I think he's fantastic. I think he would be a really good replacement for Henry Cavill if, it's not even an if at this point. I guess we do have to, recast him, which is unfortunate. I don't want to see him go. But yeah, I mentioned most of the cast already. There is one thing in particular I want to mention before I really get into the nitty-gritty of the movie, and that is David S. Goyer, the person who wrote the screenplay and story, along with Christopher Nolan there. And excuse me. He is a fellow Michigander. He's from Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is the home of the Michigan Wolverines. That is their university there, Michigan University. And funny enough, he also worked on Batman v Superman, which I might be reviewing maybe next week. I'm thinking of, and I don't know if I said this already, but I'm thinking of maybe week to week reviewing, you know, this week Man of Steel, next week Batman v Superman, week after that 2017's Justice League, and then after that 2021's Zack Snyder's Justice League. Just basically want to review each movie that Henry Cavill shows up in as Superman in. You know, he showed up in Black Adam too, but I already have a review for that on the channel, and I don't really want to spend more money on that movie, to be completely honest. But I want to watch those movies and just kind of give my opinions on him as Superman while also just reviewing those movies for the first time for the channel along with this one. But David S. Goyer, fellow Michigander. I don't know why I got completely off track of what I was saying. But yeah, he also worked on Batman v Superman. And funny enough, some of that movie was filmed in East Lansing, which is also in Michigan. And funny enough, also is the home of the Michigan State Spartans. It's the Michigan State University there. So Michigan University and Michigan State University are rivals. So it's just kind of funny that they filmed a little bit of that kind of in the rival college town, you know, opposite of where he was born in. So cool to see that he's a fellow Michigander, and cool to know that they filmed a little bit here. I remember them filming that, you know, obviously before the movie came out. And funny enough, it was actually right across the street from a comic book shop. I don't think it's there anymore, unfortunately. But the place they filmed at, and I'll tell you what scene in particular they filmed at this place for, but it's called the Eli and Edith Broad Art Museum in East Lansing, Michigan. I haven't been inside the building yet. I've seen it from the outside plenty of times, and it has very interesting architecture. The particular scenes that they filmed, I don't know for sure if they filmed interiors, because again, I haven't been inside. I don't know what it looks like, but they at least filmed the exterior shots of this particular museum for that scene in Batman v Superman where they're showing up to the gala and Clark meets Bruce for the first time. You know what scene I'm talking about, the whole thing where Bruce shows up and Clark's like, "Who's that?" And he's like, "Oh, you must be new. That's Bruce Wayne." Yeah, that area. So cool that it's filmed close to where I live. Very neat there. But let me see here. Also, somewhat recently, they filmed a little bit of that movie Detroit, close to a town near me, and then Real Steel as well. So yeah, just kind of interesting Michigan facts there, because I feel like Michiganders don't get enough credit. But let me see here. The music, first of all, is fantastic. It's done by Hans Zimmer, which arguably is one of the greatest movie composers of all time. He has composed music for a lot of films, a lot of Christopher Nolan films in general, or not in general, but in particular, such as Interstellar, Inception, Dark Knight Trilogy. Pretty much everything Christopher Nolan has done, he has done the music for. Yeah, he's a great composer. Definitely check out his music. I'm sure you've heard something that he's done in a movie that you've watched. But yeah, let me see here. The biggest complaint that a lot of people have with this movie is the destruction. There's too much destruction in this movie. And to a certain degree, I do agree with people on that, especially towards the end where you already have so much destruction. You're coming off the high of seeing that destruction. And then it just leads into more destruction. Which makes me think there's a particular scene earlier in the movie with a lot of destruction where I'm like, maybe you could have pulled back on that scene a little bit to make, you know, your climax not seem like it's doing too much, like it's trying too hard. And at times it does feel a little bit like that. But the destruction in general, the amount of destruction in this movie, the scale of the destruction, it almost adds to the movie more than takes away for me personally, because it just shows that these two gods, like, it just shows that, you know, if they're fighting to the death, nothing in their way is going to stop them at all. Whether it be a person, a car, a building, you know, they will go right through it. So it's crazy to see the scale of it. Even just in the beginning where, you know, spoiler alert, but obviously Krypton is destroyed, just seeing the destruction of that and seeing the scale of that, it's breathtaking. It's insane just to watch that much destruction going on and just to put your brain in that situation of, oh my God, there's, you know, hundreds of people down below. You know, even later on, there's a particular scene where, you know, there's a car being flown up in the air, and I don't think you really see the people inside, but you do hear screaming, and you just know that they're not going to make it out of that. And there's a lot of really dark moments in this movie, while also still having that glimmer of hope that Superman is supposed to have. But yeah, let me see what other notes I have here. How long am I recording? Not too long, but still a little lengthy. Yeah, I haven't really seen any other Superman movies, to be completely honest. Maybe as a kid, I watched a little bit of that Brandon Routh movie. You know, Superman Returns, I think it is. But yeah, other than Man of Steel, and then obviously the other appearances that Superman has along the DCEU, I've seen those, as well as Superman and Lois, as I was talking about before. And then a little bit of like animation stuff here and there. I've seen like Flashpoint. I think that might have been actually the only reference I have in terms of like movies and stuff. And then there's the games, of course, Injustice. You know, those are the references I have. And when it comes down to it, Henry Cavill is the person I think of when I think of Superman, because I kind of grew up at the time where, you know, that's the Superman that there was. And, you know, I don't think Superman Returns ever made like huge splash in the movie industry or anything like that. I don't think it did too well, from what I remember. It came out when I was really young. So, you know, with the effects that they have here, with the scale that they have here, I think this one just does it right in so many different ways. But yeah, let me see here. And there's plenty of ways that this movie doesn't do things right, with the villain in particular, General Zod. I think Michael Shannon is fantastic as the character, and he's fantastic with what he's given. Because some of the dialogue that he's given is just complete BS to me, and he essentially is just repeating the same thing the same way a million times in different ways. Or not the same way, but like he's repeating the same thing a million times in different ways. There's one particular scene where he says, this ends two ways, Cal. Either you die or I do. And I'm like, yeah, that's typically how a fight to the death goes. Just like stupid dialogue like that that just doesn't feel necessary. Speaking of stupid dialogue, maybe not stupid dialogue, but like stupid writing in general, is just with Amy Adams as Lois Lane. I'm not hating on it because it's a female character, because they try to make her an empowering character, an empowering female character at times. They show her not being afraid to like go into whatever situation she needs to get in to get the story that she wants. But more often than not, she gets herself in these situations and can't get herself back out. And so you have the man come and save her, essentially. I get it, it's Superman, and it's kind of a classic thing for Lois Lane to be saved by Superman. But you're trying to make her an empowering character while also having her in peril more often than not. So, you know, Zach, come on. Maybe he didn't write that aspect. He just directed, but I'm sure he had a lot of insight on that too. So maybe it was him, maybe it wasn't, I don't know. But just for me personally, I never really got too attached to Amy Adams as Lois Lane. Definitely got more attached to her in the Zack Snyder's Justice League, but that's a story for another day. But yeah, let me see here what other notes I have. Most people already know the origin, like I said before, but you know, unlike Batman, we haven't seen the origin done as many times, so they kind of get away with doing the origin here. Now, would I want to see another Superman origin movie? Maybe not. I don't know. Speaking of Superman origin movies, check out Brightburn. Might not be the greatest movie ever, but it's basically Superman if, you know, he became evil as a kid. Pretty crazy. But yeah, let me see. I prefer Batman over Superman, but this is my favorite DCEU movie. Maybe second to Suicide Squad, or The Suicide Squad. I think I said that before, but just reiterating that in case I didn't. But yeah, there's just a lot of really impactful moments. I think I mentioned that thing with Lawrence Fishburne's character, that particular moment that he has. Super impactful with his character, even though he is such a small character. They give enough light to the side characters, the human characters in here, the everyday characters that people can relate to, the people that were just at work when things started going down, and you know, they're now in a life or death situation. It puts you in their shoes, and that moment in particular is one of the moments that just hit me the hardest. That and a moment with Kevin Costner's character, you know, Jonathan Kent, This movie does deliver on a few different a few different moments of emotion that I think worked really well for me, and actually had me in tears. And in those moments, I was just like almost shaking, just because I'm like, oh my God, I just like have goosebumps almost because of the way this movie is making me feel. And you know, having watched it before, it never really made me feel that strongly about it before. But I don't know, maybe sometimes movies just hit me a little bit differently at different times, depending on how I'm feeling, I guess, and depending on the mood. Especially lately, I feel like I've been a lot, it's been a lot more easy for me to cry at movies. So maybe I'm just getting soft as I get older. Maybe that's just what's happening to me. But yeah, let me see here. Flight is my personal favorite song from this album by Hans Zimmer, so I'd recommend that one if you haven't listened to it or watched the movie. As you can tell, I haven't really mentioned anything in too detailed about the plot or anything like that. You know, it's a Superman movie. Superman comes to the Earth, comes to Earth. You know, he has to fight General Zod, which General Zod is also from Krypton. So, you know, it's essentially, you know, two people with similar power sets fighting, and it's a lot like a Marvel origin movie, like Iron Man and, you know, Captain America. A lot of Marvel origin movies follow the same formula, but here, you know, what they do differently than Marvel is the sense of scale, and then the darkness to this movie that Marvel didn't really have at the time, and I think is still trying to kind of gather over time with their films and shows. But yeah, it's not afraid to be dark at times. It almost pushes that PG-13 rating when you really look into it, like the moment I said with the car full of screaming people that weren't gonna make it out of there. Like, there's dark things in this movie that they don't necessarily point a whole lot of attention to, but when you think about it, you're just like, oh my God, this is dark. There's one particular spoiler moment in here that I will mention at the very end that I'm not sure about. Man, I almost don't want to like mention any spoilers in here for the people that haven't watched this movie, but it's been out since 2013, so if you get something spoiled for you, I apologize. But I'll mention it at the end of the video, or at least at the end of the review, just for the people that have seen the movie and want to hear what I have to say. But yeah, let me see what other notes I have. I have a lot of notes here for sure. Zod's message to the world, like he sends this message through TVs. And honestly, like as soon as the TV turns on and his message starts, I'm just like, oh my God, it feels like the ring. It's so creepy. And that's probably the best moment that Zod has in this movie is a moment where you really don't even see him, but like his message in general is just sends chills down your back and to chills down your spine, and all the lights go out and stuff like that. And it's just like with the TV static and stuff on the TV. Oh, creepy. I hate that shit. Yeah. So that kind of played into some deep-rooted fear that I have. Yeah, let me see here. I think I already mentioned the fact that people complain about the destruction and that it doesn't really bother me. Superman, to me at least, for being a Superman, for being a superhero, for being a comic book character, for having these unrealistic aspects, this is the most realistic Superman has ever felt. Maybe not the most realistic a superhero has ever felt in a movie, but the most realistic Superman has ever felt to me personally. At least when it comes to DC, or at least the DCEU, this just feels the most grounded as opposed to a lot of the other DCEU films. So yeah, there you go. I think that's pretty much all I want to mention in terms of this movie, because the review's already over 20 minutes long and my throat is getting sore. But yeah, have you seen 2013's Man of Steel? What did you think? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Are you in the middle? I definitely love this movie. Again, reiterating this, one of my favorite DC movies, DCEU movies, if not my favorite. So yeah, that'll tell you what I think about that. This is a movie that's on streaming, so I will rank this with my streaming service ranking system. Which is premium subscription, makes your subscription seem like you're paying for. Oh my God, let me just restart. Sorry, people, it's getting late. It's like past 2 a.m. at this point. That's always when I end up recording for whatever reason. But yeah, premium subscription makes your subscription seem like a bargain. Standard subscription worth the price of the streaming service. Basic subscription, you know, not necessarily bad, like pretty good for the most part, but not necessarily what you're paying for. Sorry, a little battery message just popped up on my screen. But yeah, then free trial, worth watching if you get a free trial, and then cancel your subscription. So bad that you need to cancel it and maybe even ask for a refund. This, obviously, I wouldn't say it's necessarily premium subscription. I wouldn't say it's worth buying a subscription to HBO Max just to watch, but I would for sure give this a standard subscription. If you have HBO Max, it's definitely worth watching, and it's worth the price of admission, I guess you could say, admission to your service. But yeah, the one thing I did want to talk about in terms of kind of spoilers is at the very end where, you know, you have, you know, Superman holding Zod's head like that. You got the lasers coming towards the family. All right, I'm going to say this right now. Did that family die? Because I've watched this movie several times, and it never really sunk in until now that they don't really show the family, like, moving around after that. So did they die? Like, when he snapped his neck, did that just, like, whoosh, like, just end that family? Comment down below, because I don't think there's any concrete answer to that. I think the only person that really knows is, like, the people that worked on this movie. Like, Zack Snyder, David S. Goyer, and maybe even Christopher Nolan. I don't know. Maybe they're all in on it, but I want to know. I want to ask them. Like, that's my burning question. I want to... And David S. Goyer, I feel like, is my guy. He's a fellow Michigander. I'm going to try to get him on the podcast at some point. Or not the podcast, but the YouTube channel. Sorry, I'm so used to saying podcast still. But yeah, I want to try to get him on the YouTube channel and interview him and talk about this movie in particular and ask him, did that family survive? Because I have to know, because I don't know when that review will happen. Probably months from now, maybe a year from now. But I don't think I will sleep until I know the answer to that question. Not really, but still. Again, watched the movie so many times and it never really sunk in until now. I just assumed that he saved them and he was just upset about killing Zod because he didn't want to kill somebody. But maybe he was getting upset because not only did he kill Zod, but he also killed that family. And that would add a lot more depth to it. But at the same time, after that, it cuts to like Superman crashing a drone, like a military drone, and be like, "Yeah, stop spying on me." And I'm just like, wow, that's crazy to go from possibly a family dying to, "Hey, you little stinker." And then like one girl saying, "Oh, he's kind of hot." But like, yeah, comment down below. I mean, I feel like there's not really a concrete answer. I feel like there's no way of actually knowing unless you're the screenwriter yourself or director. So, yeah, I mean, if you think, I don't know, if you have a theory, comment down below. I hate that it's going to spoil the people that haven't seen it. But again, it's been out since 2013, so, you know, get over it if you get it spoiled for you. But yeah, having not seen this movie, sorry, I just spoiled the ending for you. Are you planning on watching this? I hope so at this point. But why or why not, comment that down below. Yeah, and how do you feel about Henry Cavill not coming back as Superman? Are you upset about it? Do you not really care? Are you happy about it even? Comment that down below. Really, anything you want to comment, I would love to hear from you. I respond to pretty much all my comments. So really anything and everything, comment that down below. Leave a like on the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you never miss an upload, and I will see you in the next one. All right, so 2022's Everything Everywhere All at Once is written and directed by Daniel Scheinert and Daniel Kwan, better known as the Daniels. And if you're not familiar with this writing and directing duo, they also worked on Swiss Army Man and the DJ Snake and Lil Jon Turned Down for What music video, which if you've seen that music video, it's a lot like this movie, just batshit crazy. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of craziness to this movie. There's a lot of very inappropriateness, is that a word, to this movie. So for that reason, this review will be age-restricted because this video will not be for children because of the stuff I talk about, and this movie is not for children. So don't let your kid watch this one, please. It'll ruin their childhood. But yeah, this movie is... Oh, I already said the writers and directors. Never mind. So let me give you the synopsis here. An aging Chinese immigrant is swept up in an insane adventure in which she alone can save the world by exploring other universes, connecting with the lives she could have led. The villain of this film that they're... and yes, there is a villain to this film. The villain that they're trying to essentially stop is Jobu Tupaki. And... I don't really want to get too deep with this villain in particular for spoiler reasons. I don't want to get into who they are, who they're played by, and you know, what their end goal is and what's going on with them. But just know that this villain is absolutely insane and just mind-bending with the things that they do. Very great villain in this movie, but also just very layered as well. There's so many layers to the villain. It's a great villain overall, because it's not just one note. It's not just trying to be one thing. It's a lot of different things on top of one thing, if that makes sense, I guess. And you do have a multiversal aspect to this movie. So, you know, the kind of one thing layered on top of, yeah, it kind of makes sense in the grand scheme of things. So yes, this is a multiversal movie. So it's a sci-fi movie. It's an action movie. It's a martial arts movie. It's a little bit of a romance movie. It's a wee bit of a little family movie. It's definitely a comedy. And I mean, I don't even know what else to add there. There's a lot of different types of movies in this one movie. But at its core, I really would say that this is a slice of life movie. Which, for the craziness of this film, calling it a slice of life movie just seems like an absolute joke. But it's really not, because at its core, it has a really heartfelt story to it that by the end of the film has me in tears. I will be honest, I watched this in theaters when it came out, and I wasn't a huge fan of it the first time. I thought there were just too many different wacky things going on. And for me personally, like, I just wasn't having an easy time latching on to Evelyn as a character, played by Michelle Yeoh in here. Excuse me, Evelyn Wang. Excuse me again. Jeez. Always when I start recording, it's just when my body starts to produce hiccups and burps and whatever it might be. But yeah, Evelyn Wang is played by Michelle Yeoh here. And the first time watching, I was just like, I can't get with this character. But this time around, especially after seeing a movie called Turning Red, very low budget film that I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard of, there's aspects to the culture that I kind of didn't understand at the time, and kind of understood more with that movie and can appreciate more now. Because yes, she, as I said in the plot synopsis, is a Chinese immigrant, and the way it usually is with mothers and daughters, and the daughter here, Joy Wang, is played by Stephanie Hsu, very brilliantly, I might say. And yeah, I mean, the relationship between Chinese daughters and mothers is rarely ever good, you know, from a lot of people I've kind of heard from on different platforms and movies, shows, YouTube, you know, personally, just all that different kind of stuff. Like, that's a very common thing that you hear from that culture, is the relationships between the Chinese mothers and daughters, not always the best. You know, maybe that's an understatement for some families, but yeah, that's kind of something you go into here, is having this strain in their relationship. And you also have a strain between her and her husband's relationship, Weimin Wang, played by K Hugh Kwan, which, if you're not familiar with that actor, I forget exactly which in Indiana Jones movie it is, but he played Short Round in one of those Indiana Jones movies. I would love it if he came back in the new Indiana Jones movies, but we'll see. But he will be showing up in season 2 of Loki on Disney Plus, so that'll be very interesting to see him there. I don't know for sure if he's won any awards for this movie yet, but I did hear he probably got nominated. Man, really, when it comes to any other awards like Golden Globes and all that kind of stuff, if it's not the Oscars, I typically don't pay as much attention, which I don't know. Is that bad? I don't know. But yeah, I definitely think he should be nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this movie. And I think he might have won an award already for Best Supporting Actor for a different award, just not the Oscars, or at least nominated, or at least, you know, rumored to be nominated. So he is very much deserving of that, because he's fantastic in this movie, and I can't wait to see more from him going forward. Definitely has a resurgence, and, you know, it's somebody I feel like we haven't really heard much from since Indiana Jones, I guess. But I mean, I wasn't really alive when Indiana Jones, or that particular Indiana Jones movie, came out, so I guess I wasn't really around to see him in more stuff at the time. But yeah, loved him in this movie. Honestly, I would even dare say that he might be my favorite character, just because you really feel for his character in this movie, because Evelyn, just the way she is, she's stubborn, and you can understand that she's stubborn and she says mean things, but she says them because she cares and she isn't saying them to be mean. It's just how she communicates and she doesn't know any other way. But he's like trying so hard. He's trying so hard to keep everything together and keep a smile on his face and make everybody happy. And you just see it get the best of him sometimes and you really feel for his character. And then Evelyn as a character, it's just so fascinating to see her and her mindset just get her universe expanded and see things that she never thought she would see. And it just really changes the course of her whole, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Her whole story arc, I guess. Stephanie Sue in here. I don't know. I'm trying to like think of certain things to say about her character without really kind of spoiling the certain things that go on in the movie between her and her mom. But her character, I would just say overall, she's the youth. She's the one that people can kind of relate to, I guess, in the sense of like, you know, it doesn't have to just go for, you know, Chinese, families and whatnot, Chinese mothers and daughters or Chinese, you know, are really just mothers and daughters or mothers and sons, you know, parent child dynamics in general. You know, people can relate to that kind of dynamic of having maybe an overbearing parent and, not knowing how to process that and just having it kind of control your life and just kind of ruin situations and not know how to deal with other situations and you don't know how to really talk to them. And it's, I don't know. So it's just like one of those things, somebody in there for I guess younger audiences to relate to in a way, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass right now, but let's talk about some dildo fights. Yeah. This movie has dildo fights in it. Sorry. I just wanted to interject that just for a little bit of, for entertainment value, I guess. But yeah, that's how crazy this movie is. There are dildo fights in this movie. Also in the cast, I did want to mention this actress here, Jamie Lee Curtis, legendary actress. Everybody knows her. She plays Deirdre. Very weird character. She works for the IRS. And you can just tell her along with everybody else, they're just having so much fun with this film and just with the material that they're given. Because it's unlike anything that I've ever seen, and I'm sure it's unlike anything they've ever participated in. Also in the cast, James Hong as Gong Gong, the grandpa to Joy Wang, father to Evelyn, father-in-law to Waymond. Who else do we have here? We have Tally Metal as Becky Streger, the girlfriend of Stephanie Sue, or Joy Wang, I should say. We have Jenny Slate as Debbie the Dog Mom. Jenny Slate, wanted to mention her because she's a big actress. She's very funny. We have Harry Shum Jr. as Chad. Forgive me if I'm remembering this wrong, but wasn't he in the Maze Runner movies? I watched the first one, and I'm pretty sure he was in that film. But I've seen him in a couple things, and I definitely like him as an actor, so he's pretty good. And he's hilarious in here. He kind of has like one of those small kind of multiversal cameo type of things. So one of those kind of, it almost feels like a Family Guy, cutaway scene of just like crazy shit happening, but you're just like basically traveling to a different, universe and seeing different characters doing different things. That's pretty much the main cast I want to mention here. I also wanted to mention, I have it written somewhere, Andy Lee, who played the Death Dealer in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Very popular martial artist as well as a stunt performer in the Hollywood industry. And he's worked on a lot of really cool films. There's one in particular called, I think, The Paper Tiger or The White Tiger or something like that. Something with a tiger in it, which is a movie I need to watch. I need to get more into martial arts movies. I think I said that before. He's really cool in this movie. Just to see him, like, for the small moments I see him in, I'm just like, hey, I recognize that guy. Because if you've ever watched Corridor Crew, they do, like, the stuntmen react, VFX artists react and whatnot. I believe he was on an episode of that, if not a couple. And he just seems really cool. I believe he's actually worked alongside Jackie Chan before. And speaking of which, with K. Hugh Kwan as Weimin Wang. There's elements of his character in certain action scenes that really do remind me of Jackie Chan. Forgive me if I'm repeating myself here, but this is the second take of me doing this review. So If I'm repeating things that I've already said, I apologize. But yeah, there was one other thing I was going to say. Great cinematography, great camera work, great editing, you know, great fight choreography. Just a lot of really greats in general. This movie, like I said, does a lot of things really right. And I don't know if I said this before, but the aspect ratio changes. So you get widescreen and full screen. So I think that's really cool. Let me see here. I already mentioned all the cast members I want to mention. There is like one person in particular I was going to mention, but I'm not going to do it because for the people that haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it, but it's one of the funniest things in this movie. Probably my favorite thing in the movie that just cracks me up whenever I think about it. It involves Harry Shum Jr.'s character. So if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, that's hilarious. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to mention in terms of the cast, because I feel like there's just something I was thinking about, but I can't remember at the moment, so I guess we're just going to keep moving. But yeah, everybody in here does a great job in terms of the acting. Yeah, there's subtitles in this movie, you know, because there's times where they're speaking in Chinese. You know, there's other times where they're just not speaking at all and you just got to read the text. So for an acid trip of a movie that people probably got high before watching, you know, there's quite a decent amount of reading in this movie, which I obviously don't mind. You know, I don't mind reading subtitles whatsoever. I believe I watched, I think I did watch, Squid Game with the sub version. I'm sorry. I know. But there's some animes that I've watched a little bit of that I do watch dub for the Squid Game thing. I get them mixed up, but I watched the subtitles for like some other animes like Death Note and whatnot. But for that in particular, just to get through it quick and review it, which by the way, review is over on the podcast, not on YouTube. But yeah, just to like get through it quickly, I did the dubbed version. But yeah, I don't mind reading subject. Oh my god. Don't mind reading subtitles at all, especially with great movies like Parasite, and there's one called Minari that I really like too. But Parasite, another great movie I'd recommend if you haven't watched that. I believe it's a South Korean film. But let me see here. Oh yeah, I gotta mention this movie's batshit crazy. I already mentioned that, trust me. There's no getting past that fact. Yeah, we literally see, there's a scene in here, and I hate to, like, give certain things away, but there's literally a scene where you see her whole life flash before her eyes, and it's like, you know, that thing we say when we're about to die, it's like, I saw my whole life flash before my eyes. She literally saw her whole life flash before her eyes, and obviously you don't see her from a kid growing up, and you don't follow her for that long. You see her as an adult, with an adult child, and, yeah, it's just kind of their way of, like, showing everything that kind of happened in her life. And they go back to some stuff, and obviously some stuff changes because of the multiverse. But, yeah, I mean, they do that to kind of, like, show different things that happened to her along her life to kind of get her to the point that she's at. And that's just, like, genius writing right there, just to kind of do that all in one. And it also kind of reminded me of Inside Out a little bit with the way that they did it. But let me see here. It takes about a half hour to, like, really get into it, and then at times I can slow down a little bit, which, you know, for me personally, I have ADD, so it's hard to, like, keep my attention, especially when you go from something crazy happening to kind of slowing down for a bit to going to something crazy happening, but it gets to a certain point where the craziness just, like, doesn't stop. It never ceases, and then when the slow moments come, they're even more impactful because you're just like, oh my god, there's so much going on, I just want to get back to the story. And then it's almost like the film knows when you say that, and it's just like, oh, you want some more story? Okay, here you go. You know, it has the perfect balance of just, like, crazy entertainment, just, like, being wild, and also telling a good story. It balances both very well. But yeah, it has great action, great humor, and some wacky random shit, but down to its core, like I said, it is a heartwarming story. The multiversal aspects are both fascinating and hilarious. There's so many different things they do. There's only a couple that I will mention here, but there's different versions of Evelyn that you'll see. like Chef Evelyn, Opera Singer Evelyn, Kung Fu Evelyn, but there's so many other types and so many versions that I don't want to mention. All I will mention is that there's one version that involves your hands, and they have a little scene that's reminiscent of 2001 A Space Odyssey, which, by the way, shout out to Barbie for doing that in the trailer recently. But there's a scene with that, and so many movies have like tried to do 2001 A Space Odyssey scenes and like kind of parody it in a way, but I haven't seen anything do it as well as this movie does. It's one of, you know, maybe next to the whole Harry Shum Jr. thing, is one of the funniest things in this movie. Maybe it even tops that for me, but there's so many different things they do with the multiversal aspects that are hilarious. And it's kind of like Doctor Strange. They don't spend a whole lot of time in each. There's particular ones that you spend more time with. But you just get flashes of so many different things, so many different types of universes, and just different types of filmmaking, different types of maybe even animation, maybe seeing her as different types of creatures and stuff like that. I don't know, but all of it's just small glimpses. There's a particular scene where you see a lot of glimpses of that, and the whole time, like it just keeps going and going and going. It's one of those scenes where if you have epilepsy, probably not a good movie for you to watch for that scene in particular, but just keeps going and going. And that, when I was watching it, I was just like backing up slowly. I was like, oh, and by the time it was over, I was like, holy shit. And movies don't do that with me a whole lot of the time, especially just like with that build. It was insane. But yeah, overall, I don't think I gave too much about the movie away. I definitely left a lot to be enjoyed for the people that haven't watched this, and I highly recommend people watch this. I don't know for sure if it's on any streaming platforms. You'll have to let me know down in the comments below. Like I said before, I don't know if I said this before actually, but I bought it on Blu-ray on I think it was Black Friday. Yeah, it was like maybe like $7 to $8, and then it had the digital code as well, so I ended up watching it on my Vudu, which is where I watch a lot of the movies I own, because I have a lot of digital movies. But yeah, I watched it there, and yeah, I'm not too sure where you can actually find it in terms of streaming services. Maybe HBO Max, maybe Amazon Prime. I feel like I've heard maybe it's on Amazon Prime, but I'm not sure. But yeah, you guys would have to look into that, and hopefully comment down below and let people know where they can find it. But yeah, in terms of a movie that is potentially on streaming, I will rank it for the streaming service ranking system. We have premium subscription, makes your subscription seem like a bargain. We have standard subscription, worth the price of the subscription. We have basic subscription, you know, not quite what you're paying for, but not bad. We have free trial, worth watching if it's, you know, a free trial. And then cancel your subscription. You should cancel your subscription and ask for a refund. This is definitely a premium subscription. This is worth buying a subscription to a streaming service for. This is worth buying on digital or on Blu-ray or whatever it might be. And in terms of it being, you know, a movie theater movie, ranking it as a movie, you know, that's not on streaming, I guess. Just the typical movie ranking system. You know, you have premium ticket, standard ticket, discounted ticket, and free ticket. Speaks for itself. I would definitely give this a premium ticket. This is one of my favorite movies of the year, and it's crazy that I didn't like this as much as I do now the first time that I watched it. But have you seen 2022's Everything Everywhere All at Once? What did you think? Did you love it? Did you hate it? Are you in the middle? I definitely love this movie. There are times, and I didn't really say this, I probably should have said this before, but there are times where it slows down a little bit too much for me. Actually, I did say a little bit of that, but I don't think I drove that to the point enough, that it does slow down a little too much at times for me. And, you know, it is a little bit longer than it needs to be. I do think there's probably a decent amount that could have been cut out, because it's over 2 hours long. It doesn't need to be that long, not quite, but there is enough story to tell within that runtime, and it doesn't feel exhausting by any means. But yeah, have you not seen Everything Everywhere All at Once? Are you planning on watching it anytime soon? Why or why not? I would love to know. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all I have for you. Really, just any comments down below, I would love to hear from you. I pretty much respond to all my comments, so anything and everything, everything everywhere. Yeah, I'm funny, I know. But yeah, leave a like on the video, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you never miss an upload, and I will see you in the next one. Thank you all so much for listening. Once again, I am on YouTube and Instagram at The Film Punch. Same goes for my Facebook at The Film Punch, but I'm more active on YouTube, obviously, and my Instagram. I also have a little bit more of a personal account on Instagram. I don't use a whole lot, but you can also follow that if you want. It's at The Film Sensei. And in case you are wondering, yes, I filmed the intro and this outro, in the same time frame. And if you're wondering what that sound in the background is, well, somebody that I live with is taking a shower. So, kind of a bad time to record, but it's the only time I really had to record at this particular moment. So don't get mad at me, but at the same time, not a whole lot of people really listen to the podcast at this point, because most people are over on the YouTube channel, like you should be. So head over there and subscribe. I'd very much appreciate it. This podcast will be ending at episode 200, so all the content will be over there going forward. Usually during the outro, I just kind of ramble about whatever I want. But since somebody is taking a shower, I don't really want you guys to have to listen to that type of audio for that long. Kind of weird that I'm recording during that time, but whatever. It is what it is. Again, not many listens on the episodes these days, because I don't really promote them. So here I am rambling when I said I wouldn't. But in terms of the next episode, I guess I should probably tell you guys what might be coming next for those of you who are listening. Should be my reviews for Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, as well as I Want to Dance with Somebody, the Whitney Houston movie. Those should be the only two reviews that I know of, at least. I may or may not review Shrek as well, just in honor of the release of Puss in Boots, just to go back and kind of watch that. I don't really want to watch the first Puss in Boots movie again, and I don't really think a review for that would do that well. Maybe it would, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if a review for the new Puss in Boots movie is going to do all that well, so I'm probably not going to waste my breath on that first one, but Shrek seems like a fun one to review that people would enjoy, so may or may not do that, but we shall see. The likelihood of that's, not very high, but, typically I would like to have a little bit more to review, so maybe that will be in the next episode, is my Shrek review, and then maybe a Puss in Boots review all in that episode, and then maybe the Whitney Houston movie review will be its own episode, depending on how long that review will be. So really don't know, but we shall see. Again, rambling when I said I wouldn't. I will see you guys in the next one. Thank you all for listening. See you later.